Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we are recording. We pay our respects to the elders past and present, and the Aboriginal elders of other communities who may be listening today.
Welcome to The Gays Are Revolting, a dissection of social and cultural issues relevant to gay men.
We put the G in LGBTQIA+, and we're here to help you be the best G you can be.
Follow us on Instagram or Twitter, or join our community on Facebook by searching The Gays Are Revolting.
And support the show and access our after shows and our live streams, which is super fun, at patreon.com/gaysrevoltingpod.
Woo! Welcome back, boys.
We're still all separate. I can't see.
Yeah. We're all separate, but we've had a few weeks off, but at least we're back together in an audio way, even if we're not in the same studio together yet.
Kyle, I've sent you like 40 messages.
40 messages?
Yeah, I've sent you like 40 messages to be on my TV show, and you've not replied to any of them. And I also question how many people were in your house, but mainly
fucking fun police over here. I was like, you can get fucked, count the people, you know who lives in this house. I do not break any laws. It's fact. And also, I'm one of those people that believe if you just ignore your problems, they'll go away. So
it says scene. I can see that you're seeing them.
Well, you didn't exactly ignore them, Kyle. You asked me how to get out of it.
And I just keep asking. I feel like...
You asked once. Also, what show?
It's going to be big and you're going to regret it. But I thought we were better friends than that, Kyle. So that's just...
What on earth gave you that impression?
Moving on.
Yes.
Let's talk about something pleasant. And joining us this week is Nicholas Stewart, a queer lawyer, here to talk to us about finally getting some justice for a horrific gay crime that actually happened in the 80s, and a content warning that there is some triggering content in this interview in regards to suicide. So just a heads up to our listeners that there are some touchy topics in there.
Now, we have been off for about 2 weeks, which hasn't stopped people from sending in their hard-pressing questions for us and wanting our advice on things. So this one is to Tom, our resident animal fairy. So Poppers is supposed to be available behind chemist counters as of February this year. So do we know what's going on with that doll?
Yeah, well, have any of you tried to buy Poppers in the last couple of months?
I've never tried to buy Poppers ever.
I don't buy them.
You know. Yeah, I bought some probably like a month and a half ago just from a sex shop in the Fitzroy area.
In the northern Melbourne.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. A lot of people might remember for a lot of last year, there was a big conversation where the therapeutic goods... What do they call the therapeutic goods?
Administration.
We're looking at banning AML. Well, what we would call AML nationwide at a federal level, which obviously caused a bit of an outrage amongst our community because we do use AML quite regularly. A lot of people, Stephen Spencer being one of them and doing an amazing job, but a lot of other people as well, banded together to campaign against this and got a lot of people writing letters and that sort of thing, which meant that it was reviewed, which is great, and they came up with some other resolutions, some of which I think are great, some of which I personally don't think have been fantastic, but a lot of other people in the community have sort of said that they do think it's a good thing. But effectively, from the 1st of Feb this year, you cannot sell poppers from a sex shop. Now, what we call poppers, of course, is actually a lot of different nitrates. So there's amyl nitrate, which we often refer to all nitrates as amyl nitrate, but it's actually not the one that you most commonly buy. There's a lot of different ingredients that can have similar effects in there. In fact, the one that you most likely buy if you're buying poppers in Melbourne is called isobutyl nitrate. That one you're going to need a prescription for now to buy. So you can get one from a doctor, and it can be to have sex with. It can be to say,
Therapeutic sex, please.
Yeah, exactly. It's considered therapeutic, so you can get it.
Yeah.
The problem is I don't believe that there's anyone that's actually producing it at a pharmaceutical grade yet for it to be sold in chemists. There's also amyl nitrate, which now we can buy over-the-counter, theoretically, again, at a chemist. So you won't need a prescription for that. But again, there's no one, as far as I'm aware, or that I can find out, that's selling it at a pharmaceutical grade in Australia. So for it to be sold in Australia, the TGA would have to do a whole lot of tests and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And no company is, you know, focusing on that. It'll cost a lot of money to get something passed by the TGA and sold in Australia. You can buy it overseas with a script, as long as you've got the person that's sending it to you is attaching the script to the package.
It won't be intercepted by customs.
Yeah, the same way that people were buying PrEP before you could get it in Australia. I mean, and also, you know, a lot of people were buying amyl in states where you couldn't buy amyl via the internet and through mail and getting it successfully anyway prior to all of these rules. And look, like you said, Mikey, you managed to buy some already over the counter since the bans come in. A lot of places were selling it illegally beforehand, and so a lot of places are going to continue selling it illegally. They might just be a bit more careful about how they're going
to
say
I half expect you to be selling them out of your backyard.
Like a little lemonade stand. I am hoarding that shit. No, that's worth more than its weight in fucking
silicon lube.
I'm not going to be selling that amyl for anything.
Nah.
Of course, one of the upsides is, you know, that there were people getting arrested and stuff, very rarely, but it did happen for having amyl nitrate on them in some places. And of course, now that it is legal, that means that you will be able to carry it. But one of the other good things, I guess, that's come out of it is that there's evidence that isopropyl nitrate and N-propyl nitrate, this is why it's hard. Well, it's a good point though, Kyle, because we don't know the difference between all these different nitrates. We just go by the bottle. And when it's not regulated, you don't know what you're buying. And those two are the ones that can lead to serious damage in your eyes. So those two have been banned completely, which is, of course, good news.
They're not eye drops, people.
Yeah. But it is a good, you know, there's obviously a lot of bottles floating around that existed before the ban. So if you are using amyl and you are getting like floating bright spots or blurry vision, you should definitely stop taking that bottle and throw it out straight away.
Because
it's not regular, or it hasn't been regulated until now. No, they don't even have to print exactly what's on it. So even if you do know what you're looking for, you still might not get the right one that you think you're getting. So yeah, it's a bit of a shit that it's going to make it harder for people to obtain. But I guess good news that we are going to have a regulated industry and a lot safer, much safer.
Yeah. And staying a bit more local, obviously because of coronavirus, a lot of businesses have closed. Unfortunately, one of our sex on premises sites, Club 80, not 100% sure what's going on with it, but the building that it is in was sold at the end of last year. And it looks like the developers that have bought it put out a plan. They want to turn it into like an office space.
What a change.
Imagine working in that office and being like, these walls, wow, they've seen
these walls could talk.
That's it. So like Club 80 haven't specifically said anything about what's going on. They obviously put out a thing saying they've cancelled a bunch of events. But yeah, it's really strange. They haven't put out a statement saying if they're relocating or if they're permanently closed.
I saw on Twitter someone filmed them like they were gutting the inside of the building, though.
It didn't look
like that. I don't know where that was going.
Yeah.
So Nick Hollis, who we had on the show long ago, who's a Club 80 regular, posted a video on Twitter of a lot of the fittings being ripped out of the building. So I think it's pretty safe to assume that it's not going to reopen. When they sold several months ago, they were pretty clear about what's going to happen to the place, but we were told it wouldn't be for quite a while and there'd be a big send-off and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I asked a few people that work in the industry and they were saying from what they know, it looks like that they were planning on waiting a while until they close.
Yeah.
But with COVID and everything, it's just, you know, it's worked out better both for the people running the business and for the people that own the building to sort of do that process.
Early,
it is a bit of a shame, though, not to have had an announcement from the guys that run the place.
Yeah.
You know, they are human beings and they're probably pretty hurt and pretty sad that they're having to close the place up. But it would be nice
absolutely.
For the punters to know what's going on.
Yeah.
So everyone give someone else a bit of a wet one.
Yeah. And I guess it just means that Wet on Wellington's going to be even busier.
It should be fun.
Although I don't know how it's going to work with social distancing.
Yeah, I think.
I mean, I'm big. I'm not that big, you know.
Oh my god.
Oh my god. Yeah. When will the announcement be that sex clubs open? Like, what's that part?
I mean, I assume whenever gyms reopen, because we all know what the fuck's going on in the Virgin Active Melbourne City men's toilets. Like,
it's probably more sanitary than a gym.
Yeah. I would say so. Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised.
You'll ever slip on some semen at the gym?
Yeah. Absolutely.
That would require going to a gym.
Do you know, they sold out at yoga mats, because everyone's doing home workouts.
Oh, yeah.
And so I had a roll of bubble wrap that I was using to send a painting to my daddy in Adelaide. And so I just cut it to the shape of a yoga mat.
Oh, I love it.
And I do my sit-ups on a bubble. It pops and it's so stupid. But we've had some really exciting news for our Victorian gender diverse and trans siblings. Mm-hmm. So some legislation has finally come through as of the 1st of May 2020 in Victoria, which removes a barrier that allows you to update or change the sex marker on your birth certificate without the need for gender reassignment or gender confirming surgery.
Yes.
So this is actually a huge burden off of a lot of people who are looking to express their gender. You know, it means when they go see a doctor, for example, their birth certificate can now be correct without the need for costly invasive surgery as well. So it's a big win. The legislation, they started pushing it in 2019. Who knows with time nowadays, but it officially became law May 1st. So there are some really good things happening out in the world.
Yeah, it's
right
nice to hear some good news.
Yeah, it's fantastic news. I don't know if you guys saw Sally Goldner, who we had on the show a few weeks ago, wonderful trans activist, posted her new birth certificate with her gender corrected on it.
Oh, I love that.
And just seeing that the joy that brought for her. I don't see why anyone was against it. I don't see why it had to be a fight. Like, it's such a simple thing that doesn't really affect anyone else except for the person whose name's on that certificate.
Totally.
And, to see the happiness that it can easily bring people, I'm so glad that it's finally, you know, being corrected.
Mm. I love that, like, I was looking at all the different sort of markers that you could put it under. I love that they've included sister girl and brother boy for our Indigenous
amazing.
Families, really like
indigenous
I think
terms
that's
as well,
so good. And same with Fafafine, which is a Samoan word for their third gender.
It's so crazy to me that anyone would be scared or angry about these sort of changes.
Like, really, what's going to happen?
Yeah,
it's about people that are just scared of change. And we all have a little bit of that in us, I think, a fear of change. But it shouldn't be that hard to sort of step back and look at if something's important to someone that perhaps it wasn't right in the first place and perhaps change is a good thing.
And
I guess it's all about educating the wider community about why things like this are important.
I thought you said the white community.
Well, that was
oh, Tom. Oh.
That's true too.
She snapped tonight.
And just when you thought people couldn't get any more creative with their dick pics after doing lots of research, and I mean lots, thirst traps are out in full force partaking in the shampoo challenge. You guys haven't heard of that, it is this thing taking over like Twitter, I think. It started from like an anime kind of furry kind of thing from a picture.
Yeah.
And then so it involves a person with a penis in their underwear, like generally an erect penis in their underwear and balancing like a shampoo bottle on their hot dick.
I'm sending mine through right now.
Luke, I just got yours. You weren't supposed to use one of those little hotel shampoos.
Ooh.
It's a Coles Mini. It's a Coles Mini again.
Sorry. It's become like a real feat of strength now. Like, people are packing like toiletry shelves at Coles. Like, it's like a lot of products shelving up. But type it into Twitter and see what happens.
I've seen a few of my friends do it, and it's really freaked me out because they're not people that are, you know, when a friend posts a thirst trap and you're like, it's like seeing your brother or your sister or something naked.
Yeah.
I've seen a few people post it where I'm like, you know, you should actually use that shampoo on your hair. I didn't realize that you had shampoo in your hair. But it is very hot, I have to say. It has, you know, sometimes when you're just like going about your business and something hot pops up in life and you're like, oh shit, now I have to have a wank.
Yeah, yeah.
It's led to many, many wanks for me. With something. It's just popped up on Instagram or Twitter and I've gone, oh no. Oh shit, now I have to go.
Do you know what's great lube? That. Shampoo.
Yeah.
It's not. That's a false. That's
no. Not for regular sex, but it's fine for a wank.
Yeah. Do you know one thing that I saw was like there was a few women who had done it. They put a strap on and like they put underwear over the top. But then people were like having a go at them and it was just like, who gives a shit? Whatever. And so the few trans women came forward who haven't had their bottom surgery. I don't know if they want to or not, but they came forward and they did the challenge and they were just like, suck on that. Like, oh, I loved it. It was so good.
Yeah. Brilliant.
People will find any excuse to be transphobic. It's so fucking stupid.
Yeah.
I like the shampoo challenge because the thing that's sexy about it is it leaves like a little bit to the imagination.
Yeah, it's kind of hotter because it's like the unknown. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Give you everything. It's just like, well, there's no mystery.
We so rarely need to use our imaginations nowadays because you open your Twitter feed and it's like raw dogging up my fist. You know.
It's also just practical. I mean, my mother keeps most, like she doesn't have a handbag. Everything goes down her bra. And now we know that, you know, perhaps that's where you could keep your wallet and your keys and all that sort of stuff.
It's a great idea. I mean, I remember working hospitality and carrying three plates was a real feat, but like, I mean, if I'd known.
Back when I'm a dick. Yeah, here's your latte.
One other thing I'd love to plug before we get into this episode, if that's okay. I don't know if you guys saw, but my monthly comedy bingo night, Granny Bingo, that we do at the 86, we obviously haven't been able to do for the last couple of months, so we're bringing it online via Zoom. So you buy a ticket, you get sent a link for a Zoom meeting where you will be
sent a link.
Sent a link.
I am on
sent
that.
Sent a link. Oh.
Sent a link.
Job seeker payment.
Yeah, that's how they're working out who gets job seeker now. You have to win bingo. No, we'll send you a link to a Zoom meeting and then you get to play. And then we send you another link, which is a online virtual bingo ticket. And you actually play bingo with the grannies online. And it will be, it's happening 7:30 p.m. Monday the 25th. And you have to have bought your tickets by 5 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. Onto the Granny Bingo social media if you want to play. Oh, it's going to be insane. It's going to be hilarious.
Let's
and insane.
Do it.
And also like 100 people on Zoom. I can't wait.
Love oh my it. God. Good luck.
So in a landmark case for the LGBT plus community, an Australian man was arrested and charged last week with the murder of gay man Scott Johnson, whose naked body was found at the base of a cliff in Sydney's north in 1988. Hate crimes against gay people were a fixture of that time, and widespread homophobia ran rampant throughout a police force that labelled these deaths as suicides instead of murders they actually were. To discuss the breakthrough arrest after three decades, tonight we are joined by Nicholas Stewart, a partner at Dowson Turco Lawyers, a firm in New South Wales working closely with the queer community. Nick has been successful in campaigning for an inquiry into agency responses to LGBTI hate crimes and is a pro bono lawyer for Alan Rosendale, another 1989 gay bashing victim. Nick, thanks for helping our listeners to understand a little bit more about what's happening here.
Thanks for having me.
Now, firstly, who was Scott Johnson?
Scott was a American university student at the University of New South Wales, and he was known amongst his colleagues at the university as a super bright man who'd been studying mathematics and who had a future ahead of him as one of the primary mathematicians coming out of the University of New South Wales.
Wow.
He was just so bright, and his brother, Steve, who a lot of people know of, went on to be quite successful with his own academic mind using mathematics to create software.
Mm-hmm. So last year, a New South Wales parliamentary inquiry into gay hate crimes found acceptance into violence against gay men in the 70s, 80s and 90s. Gangs patrolled the streets, cruising areas in plain sight because they knew police wouldn't come after them. They also knew that the gay community were afraid of the police, so they wouldn't report the crimes. Scott Johnson's death was initially ruled a suicide, But did New South Wales police actually investigate these supposed suicide cases at all?
In some cases, they did. But in most cases where gay men had fallen off cliffs or were found at the base of cliffs, more often than not, their deaths were ruled as suicides. And Scott's, unfortunately, was one of them. In fact, even up until last year, the New South Wales Police Force was still saying that Scott's death was a suicide. I think in Scott's case too, when he was murdered and a coronial inquiry has found that he was murdered or chased to his death, you know, the evidence that was there at the murder scene were his clothes, and had been folded really neatly. He was found naked. You know, there were questions that any reasonable person would have asked themselves. You know, why would someone jump off a cliff naked? And why would they fold up their clothes so neatly? And his wallet was never found. So there were, you know, questions to be answered.
Yeah,
definitely.
What we also know is that gay men, particularly during that time, were either in the closet or wore their sexuality quite conspicuously, but in any event were vulnerable, were known not to fight back.
Yeah.
We were known not to be masculine or seen to be strong. And so we were often just vulnerable victims because of our nature, because we are sensitive. And I think, you know, these gangs and these individuals and young people targeted us because we are such an easy target, but also at another level, there was a deep-seated kind of hatred for what the gay community represented or what the trans community represented. Namely, during that time, we were becoming more visible. We were, you know, finding our liberation. The gay rights movement was really enlivened in the late 70s and throughout the 80s and then well into the 90s, you know. And on top of that, we had, of course, the AIDS crisis and the Grim Reaper campaign, which was broadcast to television sets across Australia and to every little suburban household. These images of kids being bowled over by this bowling ball and this awful kind of figure, and then the association of that with gay men, you know, it just brought so much upon us as a community. And while it was a necessary campaign, you know, the government had to take action and instill fear in the community about this awful virus. But at the same time, the association was bleak. It suggested that gay men were perverse, that we carried a virus and that we were likely to spread it, and that the heterosexual community should fear us.
And a huge part of this story has been the tireless work of Scott's brother, Steve, who refused to accept that his brother had jumped off a cliff. So when local police showed little interest in reopening Scott's case, Steve hired his own investigator. Would an arrest have been possible without Steve's determination, do you think?
Look, I don't think so. I think Steve's played a huge role in this, but it's not quite the role that you would think because, you know, Steve, I mean, how beautiful to have a straight brother who just wants to fight for your legacy and identify, you know, who hurt you and find justice. What a beautiful man. He threw a lot of money at it, and he lobbied the government very hard, and he met with commissioners of police and senior police officers, and he was accused of intervening or using his money and influence to involve himself in police investigations. So to some extent, I think a lot of just Steve's pressure and his enthusiasm for justice, the fact that he wouldn't give up, I think is a large part of this. And I think that also then triggered a record third coronial inquest. You know, you had the first coronial inquest made no finding at all as to how Scott died. The second coronial inquest said that he suicided, and the third coronial inquest identified that he was in fact murdered or chased to his death. And it was only because of Steve's pressure that that came about. And as a result of that final coronial inquest, the New South Wales Police Force and the Commissioner of Police said, you know what, we need to deal with this now. and took some very senior detectives and put them on the case. And, you know, I give kudos to those detectives because they have identified someone. And while that person should be presumed innocent until proven guilty, it's extremely positive that someone has been identified.
For sure. Yeah.
Totally. So as you were saying, detectives arrested a 49-year-old man in Lane Cove in Sydney last week. He's currently in custody now and his next court appearance is scheduled for July. What can we expect the outcome to be there?
It's funny, I grew up in Lane Cove.
Oh, wow. Oh, my God.
It's such a scary proposition. But I had chills down my spine when I was in Lane Cove.
Jeez, really close to home for you.
Yeah, it is. And it's actually a really beautiful, leafy, Lower North Shore suburb, you know. Mm-hmm. But look, when he first appeared in court, he didn't apply for bail. I'm a criminal lawyer by trade, and that's not what you do. You don't just rush into a bail application unless you're ready to, you know, you have all your ducks in a row and you're ready to make the arguments for bail. But it'd be interesting because when he's next in court, he may apply for bail. Mm-hmm. And if he does, we will get to know a lot about the case because during a bail application, the strength of the prosecution case is often put to the court by the prosecutor in a defense of a bail application to say to the court, look, you can't let this person out on bail because this is what we have on him and this is why we say he's a risk to the community. And on his side of things, if he were to make a bail application, he would arguably say, look, this is the weakness in the case. This is why I'm not the person you think I am, or, you know, I don't know what I'm speculating here. But if he makes a bail application, we're going to find out a lot about this case. And the fact is that we don't know much at all. And, you know, I think the community, even though we should be celebrating the fact that the police have identified someone, we need to respect his legal rights and the presumption of innocence, you know, and get to the bottom of this in the most fair and transparent way.
And the Australian police offered a $1 million reward for information leading to the conviction of Scott's murderer. His brother actually doubled the amount. How influential do you think the reward was? And how do we know if, like, anyone has been awarded that money yet, if it will ever be?
Yes, look, that reward was record and significant. And, of course, Steve doubled it. He said, you know, I'll add to that. And the police force has confirmed that a person who has given information may be eligible to claim part or all of that reward. The stars aligned because there has been so much about Scott's death. You know, it really has reached peak mainstream media, which has been great because it's been on people's minds. You know, I've written about it for The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald, and we campaigned for a parliamentary inquiry in New South Wales, and we had record coronial inquests. We had Steve on the news telling his story and talking passionately about his brother. And then we had a police force that was slowly recognising that there were severe and significant injustices. And so all of that came together and we had this arrest. So that money played a big reward, but also we had the background of marriage equality.
A lot of factors,
We have a lot of factors,
New South Wales Police Commissioner Mick Fuller said last week victims were let down by police and also even apologised for mistakes of the past. He said the New South Wales Police Force will never give up and that anybody out there who's committed such offences should be looking over their shoulder. It's now estimated, I think, up to 80 men were murdered by homophobic gangs in and around Sydney in the late 80s. Has this arrest raised hopes of solving other violent homophobic attacks from that same era?
Yes, it has, and I think it's going to.
Yeah, that's
good. I welcome the commissioner's statement. It's really, really nice to have a commissioner that's saying, you know what, we made some mistakes and we apologise and now we're going to come and get these guys. That is just so welcoming, and the fact is that I think there's more than 80. You know, there are lots of numbers being thrown around. That's right. There's a lot. And there's a lot of really sad stories. I'm familiar with almost all of those stories. And I'm talking some really horrific deaths. And there are murderers walking among us. And some of those people have gone and set up families and created lives. And unfortunately, for them, they need to face the full brunt of the law. And people need to come forward.
So since the arrest, people have called to overhaul the government's approach to hate crimes, saying that sort of without reform, more murders are going to start falling through the cracks or will fall through the cracks. What sort of reform do we need to see in this space?
Look, I think there's the New South Wales Police Force has a designated hate crimes unit, and I would expect Victoria Police would have a similar unit. And I guess it goes without saying that this issue is not just Sydney or New South Wales.
Yeah.
Melbourne and Victoria have their own
absolutely
awful it's just
the spotlight on Sydney at the moment. Yeah.
That's right, exactly. So, you know, there are lots of questions to be asked down in Victoria, and we need to get there. But look, to answer the question, the hate crimes units need resources. They need men and women and members of the LGBT community in them, representative of the people that they serve. That's one thing we need. And we also need to see members of our community in the senior ranks of police forces so that they are representative of the diverse community that is the Australian community. But hate crimes units also need to ask the right questions and be able to spot the language, the body language, the verbal nods. You know, I often say to people, if a hate crime is suspected, the people who would be able to identify whether if it was a hate crime are often the people who knew the accused. So if someone is charged with an offence, their friends and family would probably know how that person speaks, what they believe in, what they subscribe to, what they read, what they watch, which would all fill in all of these questions you have about how they might approach their victim if their victim is a member of a minority. So a hate crimes unit should always pay respect to the psychology, to the science, and to research about what factors play into hate crimes and what to look for when investigating a hate crime. And there are some models out there from the UK. The FBI has a good model. It's just a matter of resources.
Really interesting.
What sort of motivates you, Nick, to work in this sort of area?
Yeah, it's interesting. I wasn't around during the time of hate crimes. I wasn't open and out, and I certainly wasn't an adult. But when I was 14, I was working at a KFC store in my suburb, in Lane Cove, actually. And, one night, it was a Saturday night, and I just remember this, we had a relief manager come in from the King's Cross store. And anyone who knows King's Cross in Sydney, it's the place where all the lights are out and the gays are out and members of the sex worker community are on the streets. Anyway, he turned up and he was wearing the female uniform. In other words, he was wearing a pink shirt. The male managers wore blue and the female managers wore pink, but he wore the pink shirt.
Wow.
And that got everyone talking in the store. And he was the nicest guy. He was just so lovely. And I remember as a 14-year-old thinking, oh, I feel safe with you. You know, you seem really nice. And I didn't really pick up on his sexuality. But then one of my colleagues in the store disclosed to me, he was just another kid at another high school, disclosed to me that he and his brother and his friends would go to Balmoral and Manly and the Northern Beaches looking for gay men who were going there to, inverted commas, be alone, were his words, where he said that they would surprise them and bash them.
What?
And, Christ. Yeah, it was absolutely crazy. And as a 14-year-old, I wasn't out. I wasn't even identifying as gay. I didn't know what was up with me. But that scared the hell out of me. And I think now as a kind of, you know, prominent member of the Sydney gay community with this amazing education and a great family that supported me, I can use all that for good and for justice. And,
totally.
And I think that's where I've tied it to, you know, and I've given so many interviews like this over the years and often I cry afterwards because telling these stories are just it's so powerful and so deep, and all of these people need, their legacy has to be marked and they need to be recognized. So I just want to do them justice.
That's amazing.
Absolutely. That's incredible. Nick, thank you so much for being with us. I'm sure our listeners will find this so enlightening and so interesting. Can people reach out to your firm if they're needing legal help in a friendly LGBT plus environment?
Of course, yeah. Give us a call or send us an email, and we're pretty alive on social media, and I'm happy to have a chat anytime.
Great. Thank you so much, Nick.
Okay, guys. Take it easy.
You too.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Now, we've got a bit of a open-ended meaty topic, not a meaty tuck, but a meaty topic to talk about tonight, because one of the scariest things about living through a pandemic is I just realized how crazy it is that we're even talking about living through a pandemic. Remember when we did this show and it was like, how funny's bottoming, and who likes it?
Now it's like favorite? Depression.
Yeah, like
we're recording out of our attics.
How do you douche lip properly?
Sync? Yeah. What's your favorite lip sync? And now we're here being like, so it's terrifying being in a pandemic. But
I mean, we could just chat a whole lot about balancing shampoo bottles on your cock. But yes, yeah. I can see what you're
saying. Let us have some joy.
It's the light and the dark. But what I wanted, something that really freaks me out and something that became really apparent to me through this pandemic was it really separates a lot of the community, and it separates people into the haves and the have-nots. Mm-hmm. And it becomes really apparent when you're a have-not. If you don't have a job, if you even doing this show, I realize, you know, between the four of us, we've got different waves of us. Some of us are working, some of us don't, some of us are alone, some of us have partners, some of us have family. Mm. The things we have and the things we don't have become even more apparent.
Yeah,
and it's been said
true.
Plenty and plenty of times that minorities are even further repressed or struggle through a pandemic. Mm. It came to my attention that it was, I don't know if I say it properly, Ida Hobbit.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. Do you say Ida Hobbit? It sounds like,
Yeah, Idaho. Well, it used to be Idaho Day, now it's Ida Hobbit Day.
Yeah.
Ida Hobbit. So International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia, and Transphobia was this month. And they made a post which highlighted some pretty hard truths to swallow, especially during this time where we're all kind of looking inwards a bit. And I think and rightly so, by the way, I'm not judging or gunning anyone with this topic. It's a discussion, and I'd love to hear how other people feel. But if anything, some of our rights, LGBTQIA plus rights, have actually gone backwards in this pandemic and regressed, and that there are still so many countries that criminalize homosexuality, and if those countries, it's actually getting worse and harder to be lesbian, gay, or transgender.
And there's different reasons for it as well. I mean, there are places where it's been done actively, and this has been used purposely to do it behind a curtain, I guess, while everyone else is focused on this thing over here on this hand. There are places where governments are doing some pretty awful things to a lot of minorities, especially LGBTI people.
Even the Philippines.
Yeah, and look, even but keep in mind that Scott Morrison tried to push through the what are they calling it, religious discrimination during the bushfires. And I genuinely believe that had people not picked up on the fact that he was trying to push it through during the bushfires, we probably would have seen it trying to be pushed through during this pandemic. I don't know if you've read any of the excerpts or even Malcolm Turnbull's book in total, but there's some pretty scary stuff in there about what Malcolm Turnbull says our Prime Minister thinks about our current Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, thinks about us.
Yeah.
So yes, it is being done on purpose by bad people. But then there's also the other side of it where a lot of our wonderful activists and a lot of our wonderful organizations actually have so much to worry about with this pandemic that they don't have the time. They need to be putting themselves. I mean, I'm thinking specifically of people I know in Melbourne even that were so heavily involved in things like marriage equality, even heavily involved in things like this birth certificate for trans people that we were talking about earlier, who are now having no income whatsoever because their bars have been closed, and they're having to go and move in with their parents because their parents are too old to be going to the shops and that by themselves and things like that. So our wonderful activists within our community are also tired and having to look after number one a little bit. And there's probably also, I think, a bit of a – sorry, I've just taken over from you. But no. I think there's also a bit of a perception that we'll be okay for a little while. Like we think, oh, yeah. No, it's okay if we don't worry about this for a little while, we'll be fine.
Yeah. It'll be all right. Yeah.
But as we said earlier, you know, when you saw the reaction of people like Sally when they were able to what seems like probably a small and trivial thing for a lot of people, getting, you know, your gender changed on your birth certificate, when you see the amazing reaction that has for people, we realize that these small little things that we feel like we can just put off are actually really important, and we do need to keep focusing on them, and we can't just keep saying, oh, well, we'll focus on them after this. So I don't know how we do that. I don't know how we balance, obviously, looking after ourselves during a pandemic whilst also being worried about our wider community.
Being socially conscious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whilst protecting yourself. And I think there's this weird sort of dumb idea that a disease doesn't, like, that a pandemic affects us all equally, which is a different type of equality, and it's not true, because the LGBT community is more at risk to be affected by this pandemic. By the things that Tom's talking about, a huge part of our community works in the arts or performers, so right off the bat there, financially, our community has been heavily affected by this pandemic. And then there's people who were already on the fringe and marginalized, so the trans community, who were, you know, in certain countries targeted by law enforcement. And this makes it even easier for them to be targeted.
Absolutely.
There's some horror stories out there because they use the guise of, you know, we're patrolling the social distancing laws, but it's very targeted. It's very targeted.
And even in like certain countries where they're doing, well, men can leave on certain days and women can leave on other days to do shopping or to do whatever, that leaves out our entire trans community whatsoever. Yeah. And it makes them like easier targets for those abusive sort of powers that are in play to attack those people, which is horrendous that this is even happening.
Mm. I used the word equality before, talking about the pandemic. It's starting to feel like a step forward, step back, two steps forward, one step back. Do you still have this hope and dream for true equality at one day in our future? Like, is that something that you realistically believe in as an individual? To spill the true tea?
Where we live specifically, we are obviously in a very privileged position.
We're recording a podcast, girl.
Yeah, that's
privileged.
It.
Like, privileged.
We're lucky that we get to stay at home and we get like Centrelink payments and shit like that. But like real true equality on every single level, I just don't think that we're going to see in our lifetime. I definitely think that we are sort of getting closer and closer to it being in a Western society.
Yeah.
But I think
don't
globally,
you get a bit pissed off? Like when you, for me personally, when I start seeing sort of the racial vilification pop back up. Mm. So things like the video at the Victoria Markets where some teenagers were beating the shit out of an Asian woman, you know. And you go, fuck, I thought we moved.
I thought we already did this. Yeah.
We already done did this, girl.
Like, aren't we past this shit?
But I think the idea is, and that's what a lot of us said, you know, a lot of people that were fighting for marriage equality weren't fighting for it for themselves. It was for future generations to grow up knowing that they were equal, at least in that respect, to their classmates and whatever. So I feel like I have to imagine that there is going to be a utopian future where there is true equality. I hope that at least domestically we might get that legally. But the thing is, even if we do get it domestically in a legal sense, it's still not going to be true equality, because for the people that are already alive and the people that have already lived through these traumatic experiences, they're going to carry that trauma with them forever, and then they're already at a disadvantage. That's not going to put them on an equal playing field.
No,
just by changing laws and that sort of thing. It does definitely help, and it's a great thing to work towards, but people that are still carrying around, in the same way that we're very privileged to be born when we were born and not 50 years earlier. I hope that the people born 50 years after us are going to be a lot more privileged than we are. I hope that for them.
What privilege? I, you know, using the word legal is very important there too, because I think equality is such a like values-based, like ethereal kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And in my honest opinion, I think at some point, maybe not my lifetime, but maybe Kyle's children's lifetime, a sense of legal equality may be achievable. But this kind of like, we're all the same, human mentality kind of holistic view of spiritual equality, I'm not sure we'll ever reach those sort of pinnacles, but I honestly don't think you can really change people. I think you can change the laws and I think you can change the standards.
And I think that's a very important step in changing public opinion. I think once you've changed law, I put it this way, if you don't change the laws, then people's opinions aren't going to change because they're going to say, well, hang on, it says here that you're not as worthy as me as a human being. So it's, that validates my feelings. If you can at least take the legal side of, out of it, then that's one less thing for their feelings to sort of be based on, I guess.
Yeah. I feel like it's like about diluting people like in the future, like because the old people with these views are like going to die out. And like it's just, there's so many young people now who are so woke and current with the times and everything like that. So I feel like if these people are making children and instilling these values and beliefs into their children, it's going to eventually weed out the hate and horrible.
Yeah, but sadly, you see some footage of the people like that Luke was talking about at Victoria Markets, and you discover that there are actually, sadly, a lot of young people that have taken on the beliefs of their parents that are pretty hateful.
Yeah. The way I see it, we live in a world where a third of Poland has declared itself to be an LGBT-free zone.
Which is absolutely insane.
Yeah. Like, and I could see a future where that sort of rhetoric would be illegal. Yeah. Mm. I could see laws coming in place that would regulate that as hate speech, for example. And I can see that as something that would help lift our legal equality. Yeah. But would those people living there ever feel equal to their peers and colleagues? I don't know.
Places like Turkey, like firing gas into like tear gas into pride marches, and like I think even like official people in the government blaming LGBTQ people for the whole coronavirus pandemic.
It's so ridiculous. More likely that Bill Gates did it than homosexuals, and even that's probably not very fucking likely. I'm sorry.
Well, going back to the blame game sort of thing, like. Obviously, Korea have done really, really well in suppressing the virus. They've done a really, really good job, but they had like another sort of resurgence of it in a place called Itaewon. It's like where the gay hub is in that country. And then this Christian newspaper group came forward and was just like, well, it's the gays. The gays did it. Mm. They've created it. Mm. They're the ones spreading it.
Always the scapegoat.
The gays are revolting.
Being gay isn't illegal in Korea whatsoever, but there is no discrimination, like protection laws whatsoever. Like they can't get married, nothing like that. So like these newspapers have been given free rein to just go for it and just be like, yep, all these gay people, it's them. And even like the gay people that have contracted the virus, they've been named and shamed in their local newspapers, which is just like, what? Like, you can't be doing this to people. I don't understand.
It's very reminiscent of Fred Nile during the AIDS epidemic and that sort of thing. And we've seen that in Western culture before. This is not a new thing.
No.
And sadly, it is something that there will be far-right extremists that will say shit like that while they can. And to try and spread fear, and that's pretty awful.
But do you feel equal?
No, I think I'm too old to ever feel equal. I think no matter what it's rules change here, I would not feel comfortable going to a football match. I don't feel comfortable catching public transport. Yeah. That's why I live in the inner city of Melbourne, because that's where I feel safe.
A bubble.
And that's why I guess a lot of our community lives in bubbles, is because we don't feel equal compared to a lot of the community.
You know, within my bubble, I feel pretty equal, but
totally
to my peers and colleagues. But at the same time, I've had to teach myself how to feel that way. You know, sometimes you gotta, what is it called? Fake it till you make it.
Oh yeah.
Do you know how people say that? And sometimes I feel like I have to believe in myself that I have equal rights to everyone out there. I'm allowed to be where I am. I'm allowed to be as loud as I am, so that I can have my voice. And so I can be visible, at least inside of myself, feel like you are equal to everyone else. So that's a complicated way of answering the question.
Yeah.
Great. So that's all we have for you tonight. Or whenever you listen to this damn podcast.
No, you can only listen to it at nighttime. This is a nighttime show.
Ooh. Tonight for our after show, we're going to be discussing Tom of Finland and all his artwork. So stay with us.
Tom of Finland is just Tom doing an accent for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
People are going to pay their $7
like the
and be
Swedish
like...
Swedish chef from the Muppets.
Yeah, people are going to tune in and be like, this isn't the Tom of Finland chat. Wee.
And thanks so much for being patient with us while we've had a couple of weeks off. I know you've probably been gagging for content to listen to while you're at home, but we honestly just, we needed it. We all, you know, as we were saying before, everyone needs to look after themselves, but we are thrilled to be back recording again and can't wait to be with you in your ears next Saturday. But until then,
bye. Kyle, can I talk to you after the show, please?
Sorry, I've got plans.
Kyle, I need to have a word.
Where's the mute button?
Does this podcast have breakout rooms? Can I chat to Kyle separately?
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.